Think Again with Borderlands Cooperative.
Join us for critical conversations about things that matter.
Every Friday at 10 a.m. on 3CR Community Radio, 855 AM on your dial.
And 3CR Digital, streaming live at 3cr.org.au.
So together, let's think again about important matters affecting us, like economics,
politics,
education,
health,
climate,
and what we can do about it all. Welcome to our 316th episode of Think Again, a program produced by Borderlands Cooperative, an organization working for social change since 1997. I'm Jacques Boulet.
And I'm Jennifer Burrell.
We're broadcasting live from the 3CR studio on the unceded land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. And today we're talking about the so-called ceasefire deal, the latest development in Israel's war on Palestine. Last week, Jennifer talked with Jewish author Marilyn Garson about her 4 years working with people in Gaza, including witnessing the devastating 50 days bombardments inflicted by Israel in 2014. Garson's book, Still Lives and Jewish, Not Zionist, tell that story and how, on her return home to Aotearoa, New Zealand, she attempted to build Jewish solidarity with the Palestinian people. And after encountering vehement opposition from her presumably progressive synagogue for some years, she successfully co-founded the Alternative Jewish Voices organization, or network rather. Although the program was recorded shortly before the current ceasefire deal, Marilyn shared her pessimism about the possibilities of a Trump-orchestrated ceasefire leading to any lasting peace between Israel and the Palestinians, let alone to any restorative and lasting outcome for the Palestinian people. She also referred to the paradox that the Zionist Israel genocidal excesses have opened up a space in which the true history of the Israel-Palestine conflict can be seen and better understood. It has become evidently clear that the present war is only the latest episode in an at least 75 to 100 years old story of violence committed against the Palestinian people.
Yeah, which, as you say, populations across the world have really woken up to now, which really contrasts with the inaction of their governments, and that's striking too. People in their millions are horrified and frustrated with their governments for not taking real action on what's happening in Gaza, which they're seeing live streamed.
That's right, that's right. And it is not just about the inaction of governments. The history of violent dispossession of Palestinians has been long supported by the Western power blocs, to which Australia belongs, as well as the Western media, of which we have a good Murdoch share as well. Mm-hmm. And that happens by the deliberate obfuscation of Western journalists and news media, which up to this day stubbornly repeat the lie that the conflict started with Hamas's invasion into southern Israel on the 7th of October, 2 years ago.
Yeah, and a lie still routinely repeated in authoritative-sounding voiceovers in the media, presented as background fact, without comment, including by our publicly funded ABC, for which there's really no excuse.
Yeah, that's right. It always is an atrocity or something like that, whereas the Israeli attacks get away without being an atrocity. Just unbelievable. And is consistent with this distorted history skewed to favour Israel that Marilyn Garson described last week, how recent peace planning has been putting the cart before the horse, as she named it, leaping to supposed peace while not even beginning to deal with the realities of the situation.
Well, that interview with Marilyn was recorded before the current so-called ceasefire agreement, but her reflections are really more relevant than ever when you listen to that program. For example, she talked about the Palestinians being required to either submit to a neo-colonialist order or see Palestinian families starve.
Mm-hmm.
What some choice, more like extortion, really. And when she talked about putting the cart before the horse which should be leading is the principle that Palestine has an inalienable right to be self-determining, as unequivocally backed up by international law and international courts. But instead, the cart being put in front has requirements for Palestinians to jump through all kinds of hoops. Meanwhile, Israel refuses to comply with international court rulings that its invasion and occupation of Palestinian land is illegal and that it's committing genocide.
So there's no wonder Marilyn Garrison called the plan an absurd attempt for peace on stolen land, suspended between the real situation and government's refusal to act. Something we should be really aware of in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
It's a settler colony itself, which has been demonstrating for 250 years how to put carts before horses.
So today we thought we'd share some additional perspectives on the situation in Palestinian by listening to other reputable voices. I realise I'm saying other, we're saying that we're reputable voices, but let's go with that. We're listening to other reputable voices rather than just succumb to orchestrated outbursts of congratulation we've witnessed across the media about the latest ceasefire deal, which never was a real ceasefire, of course, even while providing some, I should say, very welcome brief and tenuous reprieve, but still reprieve in a desperate situation for people who are really desperate and traumatised, starving in many cases and without the most basic necessities of life.
That's right, which we are watching via TV and all of that as if it is just normal part of normal life.
Well, it's somewhere over there, Jacques.
That's right, yeah. So let's start with one source that cannot be suspected of coming from the usual pro-Palestinian, and I put those in quotation marks, and therefore left or far left side. Lester Munson, who is a non-resident fellow at the United States Study Center at the University of Sydney. Munson wonders whether Trump's shock and awe foreign policy that achieved a Gaza breakthrough is sustainable. And he suggests, and I quote him, "Of course, there are downsides to the Trump approach. The past cannot be ignored, especially in the Middle East, and many previous agreements and norms were there for a reason. They worked and they helped stabilize otherwise chaotic situations. It very much remains to be seen whether Trump's approach can lead to a long-term solution in Gaza. Many critics have pointed out the vagueness in his 20-point peace plan, which could cause it to fall apart at any moment." End of quote.
Mm-hmm.
And Munson unmasks the broad hegemonic myopia hiding behind most Western conventional ways of perceiving the world and of perceiving political events like the Gaza War. And I continue to quote him, "The true test of the Trump doctrine will not be the success of the Gaza Accord, but whether he can build on it to drive the West's adversaries, mainly China and Russia, apart from each other and into weaker strategic positions." End of quote.
That will be a surprising deflection for a lot of people. So you're saying that Lester Munson is propagating rather than critiquing what you call hegemonic myopia, right?
Yeah.
By suggesting the measure of success for Trump isn't really peace in Palestine and Israel and self-determination for Palestinians, for example, but he's saying the real test of success is whether the West consolidates its world power by weakening the connection between its competitors for world domination, namely China and Russia.
That is absolutely what he's saying. So Melbourne University's Marika Sosnowski in the New Daily is rather more direct in her predictions about the possible longer-term outcomes of the latest so-called plan. She calls the points of the 20-point plan, meant to occur after the immediate ceasefire arrangements, she calls them strangle contracts. To quote her, Sosnowski, she says these strangle contracts are not like bargains or contracts negotiated between two equal partners, the deal-making Trump, remember? Instead, they are highly coercive agreements that enable the more powerful party to force the weaker party into agreeing to anything in order for them to survive.
And just by the way, Jacques, those sort of contracts become null in Australia by Australian law if you're coerced into signing a contract.
Exactly. After the release of the hostages, Hamas has no leverage in further negotiations, but Israel continues to have, and I quote her again, a great deal of maneuverability and political cover. And she concludes, without meaningful engagement with Palestinians in their self-determination, we can only hope the future for Gazans will not get any worse.
Without meaningful engagement with Palestinians in their self-determination.
Exactly.
Yeah, and speaking more critically, and I should say pessimistically, Chris Hedges calls it a sadistic game and a merry-go-round of death. To quote him, this ceasefire, like those of the past, is a commercial break, a moment when the condemned man is allowed to smoke a cigarette before being gunned down in a fusillade of bullets. Once Israeli hostages are released, the genocide will continue. I do not know how soon. Let's hope the mass slaughter is delayed for at least a few weeks. But a pause in the genocide is the best we can anticipate Israel is on the But a pause in the genocide is the best we can anticipate. And I'm quoting Chris Hedges. Israel is on the cusp of emptying Gaza, which has been all but obliterated under 2 years of relentless bombing. It is not about to be stopped. This is the culmination of the Zionist dream, unquote. And Chris Hedges adds that the US has given Israel $22 billion in military aid since the 7th of October 2023. So I'm going to repeat that. The US has given Israel $22 billion in military aid since the 7th of October 2023. Meanwhile, its leader, the US leader, prances around talking about creating peace as if the US has been an idle bystander, when the most influential thing the US could do is just stop resourcing Israel's war on Palestinians. Stop supplying weapons, and also stop giving it political support on the world stage and at the UN. But as Chris Hedges says, the US will not shut down its pipeline to Israel, the only tool that might halt the genocide.
Yeah, and just a reminder for the readers, Chris Hedges has been a journalist in the area for many, many, many years, so he really does know what he's talking about. And to have this sink in a little bit for all of us.
And to give us a rest.
That's right. Give us, Give Me the Flute by Hossam Hayek. Thank you. You're listening to Think Again on 3CR Community Radio on 855 AM on your dial and streaming live at 3cr.org.au. Before the break, we were discussing elements of the so-called peace plan in Gaza, as proposed by Trump's negotiators. Like us, Anthony Lowenstein, Jewish anti-Zionist activist and writer, has his doubts about it all. Listeners may recall I interviewed him on this program in late 2023. And just this Tuesday, the 21st of October, Lowenstein commented that 2 years after the Hamas attack on Israel, US President Donald Trump now has declared that the war is over.
Well, grasping at very thin straws, some of us hope that Trump's narcissistic wish to win a Nobel Prize gives him an interest in seeing the peace hold out for at least a year, up to when the next Nobel Prize recipients will be decided.
Yeah, but really, I think it's a fat chance.
Yeah.
Anthony Lowenstein.
A thin straw and a fat chance.
That's right.
Thank you, Shah.
Anthony Lowenstein, in contrast, suggests that it is undeniably positive that hostages on both sides have been released, which is also a long overdue move. Nevertheless, he says it's hard not to feel a sense of foreboding about the future of Palestine. He warns that anyone who thinks that the trio of Donald Trump, Tony Blair and Jared Kushner, Trump's son-in-law, have the best interest of Palestinians as a priority, and anyone who thinks that needs to be examined by a doctor,
yeah,
he says.
Yeah. So what a trio, Trump, Kushner and Tony Blair, of all people.
It's unbelievable. And Anthony continues, after seeing innumerable photos and videos of Palestinians being tortured, suffocated, killed, massacred and trapped during the last decades, and reflective of what Palestinian friends from Gaza have been telling him, the sense of fear and uncertainty is everywhere.
Yeah, and meanwhile, Israel is still murdering huge numbers of Palestinians and still blaming Hamas for it, like a kid in the playground.
Yeah, that's
it's
right.
Their fault.
I didn't do it. I didn't. It's unbelievable. Lowenstein enumerates key questions which have not even been raised officially in the talks, such as how to rebuild when the Israeli occupation continues, and how do Palestinians access lost homes when Israel still controls more than 50% of Gaza?
And where's the accountability for the Israeli soldiers, politicians and generals who have promoted and carried out genocide in Gaza?
Absolutely. And whilst these questions may be considered as having to be posed and answered sometime later, Anthony warns that peace without justice isn't peace at all.
Yeah, which is echoing again what Marilyn Garson said on our program last week, that trying to bring peace without recognizing and upholding the rights of Palestinians is putting the cart before the horse, and certainly not a recipe for lasting peace. So to have any hope, we need to put the cart of Palestinian rights before any arrangements for peace. That's the point.
Or we need to call it the horse and leave the horse in front, exactly, to continue with that kind of... Anyway... And just when you think it couldn't get worse, Lowenstein refers to some unsurprising news sent by Mohammed Chohada. And I quote, Jared Kushner, Peter Thiel and Larry Ellison are planning to turn Gaza into a haven for billionaires with a, and I quote, city of tax-free startups, with scattered server farms for cloud processing and artificial intelligence, and factories with cheap labor and very simple regulations, end of quote.
Oh, gosh, like some sort of dystopian science fiction movie, I guess, with the Palestinian people providing the cheap labor for the opportunistic capitalist overlords, or I could say disaster capitalists.
That's right.
So much for Palestinian self-determination. It's obviously not on their radar at all. But Shark, is that a real proposition. And really, and who are Peter Thiel and Larry Ellison?
They are very close friends of Trump, and they own or have lots of control over a variety of the internet kind of a universe.
The capitalist vultures.
That's absolutely. They're multi billionaires and all of those. Mm. So it has been confirmed, by the way, that Ellison, I think he owns, I'm not sure which one, but it's one of the big ones, one of the big seven in terms of internet, social media and all of those things. Exactly. Tech. And Ellison is ready to put in $350 million into the plan using Israel's Channel 12, which is the largest and most watched Israeli TV station, and he owns interests in it. Kushner and Thiel are in it so that Gaza would become a tax haven that would bring about the long-hoped-for normalization agreement with Saudi Arabia, which they had for a long time being resisting a normalization of relationships between the Arabic states and the US and the West because of the fact that they have their own interests there, and particularly also in ownership of all the resources like oil and all of that.
So it's economic, political normalization.
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Yeah. So Lubenstein concludes, and I quote him, "Disaster capitalism, as Naomi Klein has described it, has wreaked havoc across the world for decades." And he refers back to his book and film about this insidious thinking, hoping that it must not become reality in Gaza, let alone in the West Bank, where Israeli apartheid is murderously surging.
Yeah, so more than ever, activists have to really keep up the pressure because one of the few hopes is really in people power, I guess.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And we'll put links to APAN and Free Palestine on our program page, along with some of the articles we've referred to today. So we'll finish the program with a rather famous poem that a lot of listeners might have heard before, Rafif Ziada, "We Teach Life, Sir." So I'm reading this, but I will put a link to her reading it on our program page. "We Teach Life, Sir," is the name of the poem. "Today, my body was a TV'd massacre. Today, my body was a TV'd massacre that had to fit into sound bites and word limits. Today, my body was a TV'd massacre that had to fit into sound bites and word limits filled enough with statistics to count a measured response. And I perfected my English, and I learned my UN resolutions. But still he asked me, 'Ms. Ziada, don't you think that everything would be resolved if you would just stop teaching so much hatred to your children?' Pause. I look inside of me for strength to be patient, but patience is not at the tip of my tongue as the bombs drop over Gaza. Patience has just escaped me. Pause. Smile. We teach life, sir. Rafif, remember to smile. Pause. We teach life, sir. We Palestinians teach life after they have occupied the last sky. We teach life after they have built their settlements and apartheid walls after the last skies. We teach life, sir. But today my body was a TV'd massacre made to fit into sound bites and word limits. And just give us a story, a human story. You see, this is not political. We just want to tell people about you and your people. So give us a human story. Don't mention that word apartheid and occupation. This is not political. You have to help me as a journalist to help you tell your story, which is not a political story. Today my body was a TV'd massacre. How about you give us a story of a woman in Gaza who needs medication? How about you? Do you have enough bone-broken limbs to cover the sun? Hand me over your dead and give me the list of their names in 1,200 word limits. Today my body was a TV'd massacre that had to fit into sound bites and word limits and move those that are desensitized to terrorist blood. But they felt sorry. They felt sorry for the cattle over Gaza. So I give them UN resolutions and statistics, and we condemn, and we deplore, and we reject. And these are not two equal sides, occupier and occupied. And 100 dead, 200 dead, and 1,000 dead. And between that, war crime and massacre, I vent out words and smile, not exotic, not terrorist. And I recount 100 dead, 1,000 dead. Is anyone out there? Will anyone listen? I wish I could wail over their bodies. I wish I could just run barefoot in every refugee camp and hold every child, cover their ears so they wouldn't have to hear the sound of bombing for the rest of their life the way I do. Today, my body was a TV massacre. And let me just tell you, there's nothing your UN resolutions have ever done about this. And no soundbite I come up with, no matter how good my English gets, no soundbite will bring them back to life. No soundbite will fix this. We teach life, sir. We teach life, sir. We Palestinians wake up every morning to teach the rest of the world life, sir.
Next week, our program will feature stories and poems from Palestinians living in Gaza. This is part of our promotion of an event at Trades Hall, Voices Under Fire, Stories from Gaza, which will be on Thursday, the 6th of November at 6:30 at Victorian Trades Hall, Trades Hall Council, actually 54 Victoria Street, Carlton. I'd say that again. Trades Hall is Victorian Trades Hall Council, 54 Victoria Street, Carlton. And we will put a link to that event on our program page.
And the next rally, pro-Palestine rally in Melbourne, is Sunday, 2nd of November at 12 p.m, State Library of Victoria. It's called Stop the Genocide in Gaza. And otherwise, listeners can keep up to date on campaigns and actions to support Palestine, Free Palestine, and also the Australia Palestine Advocacy Network, or APAN. And again, we'll put the links on our program page.
Just a very brief note that our conference on community development was very successful, and we will say more in any of our later programs.
Yeah, wonderful participation.
It was fantastic. It was.
Thanks to our listeners for tuning in to Think Again on 3CR Community Radio today. If you want to send us any comments about today's program, email boards@borderlands.org.au.
Our past programs are available by podcast on different platforms and via the 3CR website at 3cr.org.au. And meanwhile, to finish our program today, please enjoy Milko Mana by Kim Steve.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.